Very good. Jack actually recorded me in advance of my full iteration, which is good. Okay, let's get right into it. We are going to try to have a hard stop around 11. We can go a little longer if we have to. We want to get to everybody's questions, but this is actually, I've got some family stuff to do this morning. So, stocks. We mentioned that there would be some concerns on the break of 450 on the spider. That has occurred. We are expecting that. But the real thing here going on right now is not so much what the market is doing, but take a look again at the themes that we've mentioned over the last bit of time, which is looking at the high relative strength names, looking at things like MGV, Victor Value versus MGK. Notice that some of the dividend stock ETFs like SPHD and PEY are trading near their highs still with rather good yields. And realize that, you know, on this decline, we are still the break, and let's try to see what happens. The break of 450 suggests that we will make a new low for this move in the second quarter, at least so far. If we can continue down, we would like to see the spider get back down into that 420 area. We would like to see the Qs actually get down to 325 to 320. We think that's possible. We certainly think that's the risk. But again, what's really going on here is this is a rotation out of some of these big tech names, out of these some of these tech names that have been sort of bizarre traders. That doesn't include stocks like Apple. Apple, for example, the good big techs, you know, are showing relative strength. Bob Robbins mentioned a couple on the call. I believe he said Microsoft, certainly Apple. There are some names that are doing okay, but what we really want to be doing is looking at materials. We want to be looking at staples. We want to be looking at stocks like Nucor, stocks like FCX. All of these sorts of names are trading very, very well. And, of course, the dividend names and such are trading well also. The themes that we've been mentioning are working, and that's where we would be going. There's stuff to buy, and we do feel that whatever market turmoil is left will be over by June, and we'll have a decent second half to the year. We mentioned on the call the last week, and again, we have not lowered our targets of 510 or so on SPY by year end. Sometime during the year, we should achieve that. And so we're reasonably optimistic, but we do think that the break of 450 on the spider suggests that we could see a little tiny bit more turmoil before that happens. Again, we think there's going to be some tough earnings comparisons and such in the second quarter, and that should lead us to the low that we're looking for, if indeed we haven't already made it. Of course, it's possible we haven't made it. But again, the key is whatever is going on in the market, if the S&P is going up or down, what you're seeing is the themes that we've talked about are showing relative strength and actually, in many cases, making new highs. So that's where we want to be. Let's talk about bonds. We've had some questions on TLT. The question was, is it as oversold as it's ever been? And the answer is no, it has been more oversold. Certainly it is oversold. Certainly we will look again this weekend to see our accumulation model. It certainly says that bonds are going to go back in terms of TLT back to the 130 area. We had mentioned selling on the call last week and in the weekly last week, not this week's weekly, but last week, selling TLT for those people that didn't want to hold it at 132. That did work. This is now obviously lower than 132. We'll just have to see how this goes. The oversold, however, the real way to look at this on bonds and TLT, let's look at IEI. It's in the same position, if not worse, in IEF. What these readings mean in terms of oversold and failed buy recycles is that we started a new trend down for sure in terms of price. And we should get an oversold rally that will most likely lead to a divergence bottom, i.e. a lower low after that rally. and then a higher low in momentum. So is this the time to buy TLT for a trade? We don't think it is. The question really is, you know, will my accumulation model say that these things are finally being sold by the big money or not? And if they are, you know, how low can they go? Could TLT go all the way back to 100? Yes, absolutely. We think it, you know, in this interest rate cycle, it could very easily do that. But will it do it right away? No, and we don't think it's going to do it this year. We actually think this year will close in the 128 to 130 area based on our accumulation model at this time. Let's talk about GLD for a minute. We mentioned in last week's weekly that the accumulation model short-term on GLD has continued to improve. It doesn't really change the super long-term outlook for gold, but because the model was just so badly decimated. But this does suggest that gold and gold stocks could be up into June. So that's an area, again, if it starts to move, it could have a decent move. Right now, it is certainly in a base. There's certainly nothing wrong with holding it here. Jack, we may look at all of the metals, including platinum, in this week's weekly coming up. So we'll do that. Let's take a look at oil real quick. Again, oil is sort of trading around. The interesting thing to me is it's maintaining this consolidation, even though they're releasing oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Normally, a release of that nature just decimates the oil market. In this case, it is not. Obviously, we have no ideas, but certainly the implication is that oil prices are going higher, that this is not going to work, and whatever that means, maybe it means that OPEC is going to say, pound sand, we're not going to produce more oil. Maybe it means, I heard one oil company guy that I know saying that, you know, he was not going to do any exploration until any of the environmental regulations were loosened, and that he was actually going to keep his production steady or even cut it a little bit, looking for higher prices. So, you know, we'll see how that works, but certainly when we've seen releases from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve before, oil has really broken, and it's down from there, but it certainly hasn't broken, and it hasn't broken the pattern. In international, we keep looking at EEM and thinking that it just it's going to turn around and head back down towards that gap. We think the reason for that is GXC still has targets of 80 on the downside. We mentioned that a couple of weeks ago on the rally up. If it can hold that and we can get a decent divergence bottom on that and a daily stochastic recycle, that may be it for China. But right now we're in the decline phase and not in the, oh, goody, we're looking to buy it phase. EFA actually in some respects looks a little bit better and the stochastic is down more. But again, what we have been suggesting is buying stuff like EWL, which is outperforming, EWJ, which is certainly down now, but we think has got a good long-term chart and a couple of other odds and ends. And certainly some of the commodity markets look interesting. Maybe we'll take a look at the odd Asian markets, Jack, in the weekly this week. Other than that, we really don't have any changes in opinion on much of anything. You know, certainly there's been a surprise here is that the bonds have been weaker than we thought. We'll have to see how that goes after the Fed minutes and everything are announced. In the meantime, let's turn the call over to Jeff Garbaz and see if Jeff has any questions for us. Jeff?
How are you?
Functioning at a high level.
Happy, since you're a Georgia guy, happy Masters Thursday.
Oh, God, yeah. Thank God I'm not in Augusta. I will say this, Jeff, we had enough rain last night that I almost couldn't finish the chart book because of thunder and lightning, and the pollen is now off. The air feels great.
Great. Well, I know that yesterday, since I'm a Masters fanatic, they said 1.5 inches during the day, and last night they had another 1.7, so the ball is going to stop pretty quickly and not go anywhere. But the good news is it's done with the rain now. So
yeah, I think the rain is done for a good bit, it looks like. So that's excellent.
So with this sell-off we've had the last couple of days after we kind of hit the peak on the 29th of March, are you saying that you think we're oversold? Or Like, I
No,
want to
I
get
think
your.
we can go back down and make a low on the quarterly indicators in June, which would imply lower than here.
Okay, so on the way back down again, small cap is leading on the downside. Its daily stochastic is almost oversold, not quite. You expect that trend to kind of continue when we sell off, that small cap leads the way on the downside?
Jeff, that's really hard to say, but I think that what we're seeing here is the economy is definitely slowing. I think you're seeing some things on mortgage articles on mortgages, applications being down 40% and such. And I think small cap is reflecting that. The key is that I think most of this is going to be over by June.
Okay, so that being the case on mortgages, you're right. The year-over-year number was down 40%. The week-over-week number on applications was down 6.9% this last week. The home builders look awful. Can you take a look at Toll?
God, for whom the bell tolls. Yeah, this
There you go.
definitely. Sorry, I'm going to be a dead ringer if I keep that up, Jeff. Yeah, that looks like it can get to 40, and certainly looks weaker.
What about DHI as well? That looks like the you want to be away from the home builders for now.
Yeah, Jeff, that's an astute observation. I completely forgot about the home builders, but when I look at DHI, it's not hard to see a head and shoulders top on that's breaking the neckline at 75. Really has already broken the neckline at 78. So, yeah, that doesn't look at all healthy.
And what's interesting too, to your point about the economy slowing, I totally agree with you, because gasoline psychologically leads people to, kind of bring it in and not do as much. But housing related, look at Mohawk, MHK. That stock is falling apart.
Yeah, that's getting a real haircut. Sorry. Sorry.
Look at Lazy Boy as well. LZB, same thing.
Yeah, my friend just bought the Bubba chair, by the way.
What's the
That's the
Bubba
Lazy Boy
chair?
recliner with a six-pack of beer holder with a refrigerator in it. We call it the Bubba chair here in the South.
Yeah. And look at Home Depot too. Not acting well either.
Jeff, honestly, I don't talk about the stock selections in the sector review because we don't track them performance-wise over the long term. I mean, I guess we could go back and do that, but that's really not the thrust of what we're doing. But honestly, the sale I did on Home Depot in the 400 area is still one of the better sales that we've made on one of those big, super stocks.
Exactly. I mean, like everything that's housing related to me, and then look at Lowe's too. Lowe's is the same chart as Home Depot.
Yeah, they both don't look particularly good. Lowe's actually looks a little bit better, but Jeff, again, we've had a bizarre housing market. I really follow the Atlanta market and the Los Angeles market the most because those are markets that I know very well, and condos and such in New York City. Those are markets I've been in and that I know. New York City condos are still up, but year over year, they're down, I think 6%, but prices are up. I think that may very well change.
So look at TLT. Since kind of it started with the big increase in rates that started kind of in December, the daily stochastic, all it's able to do is basically hit 80 and then fall apart again. So are we in a mode of every time the TLT hits 80 on the daily stochastic, we want to be a seller of it until otherwise proven?
Yeah, I mean, Jeff, honestly, remember that the rules on the stochastic for short selling are exactly the opposite of the rules on the stochastic for buying, except that you're moving, taking a sell recycle as a place to establish a short position.
So look at kind of moving away from that. Look at that gas looks awesome compared to USO. And I know that we got contango issues with both of those, but if if you look at the pure nat gas contract on like Bloomberg, it's like this chart as well.
Yeah.
I give you hope that energy stocks that are natural gas related continue to do well through this period?
Yeah, and Jeff, I think it's important to really think about oil companies were doing everything they could to get their break-even point in terms of profitability down to around $45 a barrel. So,
yep.
Obviously, at these prices, they are profitable.
Yep,
way profitable. And even if prices go down $10 or $20, they're profitable, and that bodes well for the energy sector. I'm not as familiar with the natural gas stocks, but I understand from my friend Dennis, now in Austin, he's a petroleum lawyer, midstream lawyer. He was on the call one time talking to us about the MLPs years ago before they collapsed. He correctly said these things are going to collapse. It hasn't started yet, and that was when they were down about 40%. And they fell another 60-70%. I mean, it was just a disaster. Dennis says that natural gas companies have done the same thing. You know, they're not so concerned about the prices now. What they're really concerned about is what they feel is the inability to look for more supply because of excessive regulation.
Yep.
And he said most of them just given up on it. They're going to coin some money and relax.
Yep. Okay. Other question is the monthly on the IWM is getting close to getting oversold for the first time since 2018. So does that give you more hope that we're kind of more near the end of this, especially for small cap? And do you think that SPY and Q, which were like are a long way away on their monthly stochastic from getting oversold, i.e. down below 20, that may be where more of the pain comes from between now and June.
Jeff, I think that the real pain is probably going to come from the Qs simply because I still think, and I know I sound like a broken record, that the average second-tier tech stock has a lot more to fall.
Yeah, so that's going to hit
the Qs.
Let me ask you that question. So basically from January onward we until we hit the March low, we had a series of lower highs and lower lows, and now we've kind of broken that a little bit. We kind of hit a new high from, the other sell-offs that we had, and now we're starting to sell off again. But if we go back to, Let's say we don't make a lower low, then we get a bit of a bounce, but then we make a lower high. Are you watching like highs and lows to kind of anticipate when we kind of get through this? I mean, June is not that far away. It's only a couple months
away. No, it's not. And again, Jeff, one of the things that you're saying, but you haven't said it, so I will say it directly, is if, as I suspect, this is a continuation of a correction in a bull market, not everything is going to go down. Not everything is going to collapse. Not everything, there's stuff that is buyable, and we're seeing that in the marketplace. Right?
Fred, what's so interesting about you saying that is each week, one thing Jack and I do with Phil is we put out a screen of favorite longs and favorite shorts, basically short squeezes we like and long squeezes we don't like, right?
Right.
But what I found interesting about the sell-off on Tuesday and Wednesday was that, there's 11 longs on the list this week, and there's 7 shorts. And, almost half my longs are making money. Look at the chart as an example of ETR. That's been a pretty good chart. And
yeah.
Look at UNH. That's had a really pretty good chart.
These are value-oriented stocks that are trading well. And, Jeff, like I said about 2000 to 2002, if you bought UNH at the peak of the S&P in 2000, by 2002, you were up 25-30%. What bear market did you have? right? The answer is it was a bear market in Cisco and all that stuff. And Jeff, but I'll tell you one thing that I keep hearing from relatively unsophisticated market participants that, and I know we've got sharper people on this call than this, but someone mentioned my old favorite, Ring Central. How could it have gone from 430 down to 120? That was his question. Of course, it's lower than that now. You know, the real question also is, how could it have gone from 25 to 430? Right?
Yep.
You know, in other words, we have a bias in our heads with regards to stock prices, and that bias is up is good, down is bad. We all have it. I have it. Everybody on this call has that. When actually up and down are just price movement, right? Something that was valuable at 25 that went to 430 was a fad, and it may very well go back to 25. Right. That's why we always emphasize following the indicators. But the real thing here, and, you know, we've tried to point it out, is, you know, you buy SPHD and you're making another new all-time high today. Right. This is not terrible.
Yep.
Right. And in addition, you're getting paid 3.5%. I mean, this is really not terrible. Right.
Yep.
In this kind of environment. And yet we still, Jeff, again, you read a lot more of the message boards and stuff than I do. But when I read MarketWatch, it says, golly, when can I get into Amazon? Right? You know, you don't want to get into Amazon.
Yep.
But anyway, back to more questions, and then we'll open for questions.
Done. That's good. You've I think you've set the stage, you know, pretty well for right now.
And let's see what happens. Yes, sir. Question. I hear it.
Yeah. When can we get into Amazon?
I am looking to try to buy Amazon. Let me just see if I can get it up here. AMZN. If I could get Amazon at 2,400, 2,500, I would be extremely interested at that time.
I don't think it's ever going to happen.
It may not. But, you know, the real key, though, is this. Amazon is a sideways to downtrend, right? So why do we want to look for it when we can buy something that's in an uptrend? That's the real question here to me.
Would you sell QQQ
and
Amazon?
Sorry?
Would you sell QQQ and Amazon?
Yeah. Or if you're holding them, hold them. You know, we've all got portfolios that have some of this stuff in them, and huge embedded taxable gains in them too, right? So there's no reason to just say I'm going to take that gain. But the real question is, if you've got a model with those in it, should we add those into the model, or should we add better performing stocks? And I think the answer is, add very small positions because they are in the models. I feel very confident that we'll get a long-term buy signal on Amazon when it's time to get it, and we'll be able to trade it, and we'll be able to have it in our models. But, you know, if I had the choice of buying UNH or Amazon, there's no choice.
Thank you. I agree
Brad,
with that.
Hi, it's Nancy.
Hey, Nancy. How are you?
Good. Would you rather – this is choosing between two good ones to buy. Deer – DE or PXD? PXD, which looks stronger?
Let's see. I'm looking at Deer, and Deer's been a favorite. You know, PXD looks very slightly stronger, but I think the real question is, you know, they're very different industries. If you've got a big energy position, I would be very happy adding Deer.
Could you add them both right now?
They're showing commonality.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Fred, I've got a fairly large profit in Starbucks, and they got the old CEO back, and the stock's not behaving well. And I was thinking about swapping it out for Chevron. Do I wait for CVX to have a buy on the daily stochastic?
I don't think so, because, and Michael, this is sort of the stochastic can also be a measure of relative strength, right? And in this environment, I think anything that's 10% or less from its highs is worth buying. Because, Michael, I think what's going on here is we're seeing a rotation, and that means that, frankly, you know, you want to buy relative strength without reference to the stochastics in this case. Does that make sense?
Well, the only thing is I got a 50% gain at Starbucks.
Yeah, and Michael, I'm going to come back to what one of our clients said to me privately last December, and he's in Seattle, this client. So you can imagine what his local hometown company profits are, right? But certainly Starbucks, Microsoft, and Amazon were large holdings, and he even had a bunch of legacy retirees in these for years and years and years, right? Sort of like we have with Coca-Cola in Atlanta. And what he told these people was, there comes a time when you just have to pay some taxes, right? And this may be that time on some of these names. I know he did that in December on some of those Seattle stocks, his hometown place, right, and diversified into some other stuff. So, you know, Michael, if you want, I'll shoot you that article off on, but it doesn't sound like you need it, that I did on, you know, taxable equivalent short-term versus long-term gains and tax brackets. But, Michael, I think it's probably worth doing that diversification. I think you'll end up 5 years from now with a little bit better luck in Chevron than you will in Starbucks from the way these things are trading.
That's what I thought, too.
Yeah, okay. I mean, at least 2 years, Michael, you know, until Biden is out of office and we see what the next guy's energy policy is going to be.
Yeah, I'm the deer in the headlights. Hard to pull the trigger on that.
Michael, I don't like paying the taxes either. But, you know, it reminds me of a conversation I had with somebody back at Robinson Humphrey when he asked me about Nucor when we did it. Bob and I did a strategy snapshot. And I said, you know, golly, it looks like the stock is going to go down. He goes, well, I've got a huge profit. And I said, well, look, God, it could fall like 20%. And he goes, geez, that wipes out my profit. And I said, well, then I took care of your tax problem for you.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Thanks, Fred.
Sure, Michael. Be safe. We'll talk later. I miss you. What's going on? Other questions?
Hey, Fred, it's John.
John.
You know, about 12 months ago, I raised cash in my technology portfolio, and since then, it's been great. Like, the market's been down a lot. Some of my names are down 50% or more. And my question is kind of getting back in. That's my weakest. I never know when to jump back in. I mean, when they're down 50%, it seems like a good time to get back in. But everything you're saying sounds like maybe I just need to wait. But I've got three tickers that I'd like you to take a look at, if you don't mind.
Sure.
T as in Thomas, S as in Sam, V as in Victor, T as in Thomas.
You know, I guess the question is this really, John, and that is, are you really satisfied about the fundamentals on these things?
Yes.
If you are, all of these,
yep.
Yeah. And you start a dollar cost averaging campaign, and I'm right about this being over by June. You know, I think it's safe to say that the stocks with really good fundamentals will probably survive and do well in the second half of the year. So if you were to start picking, say, this TSVT, I don't like it because it's a new issue, but certainly that big weekly up bar a couple of weeks ago is a fairly good bottoming sign, and it did happen at new lows. If I were to start dollar cost averaging in this and get some of it here and some of it at 14, and we get through June and the market perks up, that would probably be the way I would do it. Remember, you can always increase your dollar cost averaging speed. It's hard to decrease it if you're already in.
Right, right. Okay. No, that's great. That's kind of along some of my thoughts too. So I've got about 30% sitting in cash and it's just sitting there, but it's, like I say, it's been good. But so how about VNET? V as in Victor, N-E-T.
V-N-E-T. You know, this doesn't look really groovy here, but
okay.
You might be able, I would buy some, if I could get it at 520, I would consider some at 520. I would consider some in June if we look like the market has made a bottom of the kind that I'm thinking could happen. And, boy, I could be wrong about that. But, a quarter here, a quarter in June, and we look at it, and if it goes to three and then some bad news comes out about the company, you're only in, with a 50%
right.
position.
Okay. Okay, great. Yeah, and how about Z as in zebra, S as in Sam, Zscaler?
That looks much better. Again, start to dollar cost average it and see if you can get some at 200. That would be great. But
great.
That wouldn't probably happen until June, and it might not happen.
Okay. No, this is great. Thanks so much, Fred. That's helpful.
Yeah, and I will mention one thing. And again, I pick on this stock a lot because I got in a lot. Well, I didn't get in a lot of trouble, but I created a bit of a furor at Robinson Humphrey when I downgraded WorldCom at I think it was 49. The bad news really didn't start coming out, and Jack Grubman didn't really downgrade it to a market perform until it got to like $5. Right. What usually happens is the stocks collapse and then the bad news comes out.
Right, right, yeah.
Be aware. Yeah, because I had a number of Smith Barney brokers call me up and say, why on earth are we paying that guy $1 million a year to do that? But any event. Any other questions from you, John? Otherwise, let's move on to someone else here.
No, thanks. Yeah, appreciate it, Fred. Thank you.
Good. Other questions? Got to have another one. Other questions? Scott is out. He's on vacation.
Hey, Fred. It's Justin.
Yes, Jeff. First.
That's
person.
Justin.
Justin. Okay, sorry. Justin.
How
you
been?
Good.
Good. How about an MLP fund? It's Charlie Echo Mike.
You know, this is trading very well. Again, relative strength. This could make it to 36. I think we said that in the chart book a couple of times. But this is the sort of thing that certainly I would hold it. And if you've got some money to deploy into it, new account money, I would certainly start to deploy it.
Terrific. And then the banks, what do you think of JP Morgan, JPM?
JPM, it's been a favorite bank. I have been a little bit more interested in the regional simply because I've been worried about the non-existent Russian exposure that no one says is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
But I'm worried about it anyway. But JPM, should hold 125 for a while, and I don't think it's going to go much below 90, even if the correction in it gets really bad. It is a premier bank, and it's one that I'd be fairly happy with. Let me take a quick look at its compadre. Yeah, Bank of America, I've been looking to get to 32, and I think I can get it to 34 to 32 before this is over, but that would be by June. And again, I'm going to contrast that with FITB, which is a weird little bank. In Cincinnati that probably the Russians don't even know exists because they can't pronounce the name, that's trading much better.
Okay. And then what about Honeywell, HON?
That's trading quite well. And again, you buy some here, you buy some at 175 if it gets there. And if I am right and this corrective behavior is over by June, you should be pretty well positioned.
Great. Thanks, Fred. Have a great day.
You too.
Hey, Fred. This is Steve from Tampa.
Steve, how are you?
Good, good. What do you make of the, you know, to dovetail kind of off what Jeff was talking about with regard to the home builders, I know this is a different asset class, but related. What do you make of the continued relative strength in REITs? I mean, they seem to be holding up well. If we're in an interest rate rising environment, you would think that they'd be having a more of a struggle, but REITs,
you know,
up
this
well.
Has been one of the things that has confused the dickens out of me. I've been
good. I'm not wrong
on this. Yeah. And, you know, I'm the idiot that downgraded utilities just before they, you know, 6-7 months before they broke out and upgraded REITs to an equal weight down from, I don't think these should be doing as well as they are, but there's no denying that they are. I'm looking at IYR, and again, it's at resistance. If this sells off, it could make it back to 102 fairly easily. But they are trading well. I think it's because the market is, my guess would be the market is anticipating more and more people going back to work and all the office stuff not defaulting. But I don't know.
I mean, the same could be said about utilities. I mean, you know, it's Duke Energy and some of these almost look like a Peloton chart, you know, from a year ago. It's just remarkable how Duke and, you know, you would think in a rising rate environment, you know, both of these asset classes would be doing much worse. You know, if you classic John Murphy, you know, interrelated asset classes, that these should be performing worse in a rising rate environment.
You know,
but
Steve,
unless the market's betting that rates aren't going to go that high. I mean, maybe
send me an email, because I did a big report years ago that I can republish, but certainly send you on how utilities fare in a rising rate environment, and they outperform bonds by so much that it's not even funny. Rising rates are great for utilities. And the reason for it probably is I have yet to own a bond that raised its coupon to me, but dividends go up on utilities all the time.
Right.
But I have charts going back to the 20s on that, and I can send that report to you. You know, that's why I keep saying in the monthly, we think that the institutions have been buying utilities for yield and not talking about it.
Right. Got it. All right. Well, I've been confused. I'm glad you are, too. I'm not alone. I appreciate it.
Yeah, REITs, I wouldn't own them myself, but they're certainly trading okay. But if you want that report, shoot me an email to fred@thefredreport.com,
sure.
I will return and I will send you a unit back.
Sounds great.
Report.
I'm sorry we missed you when you came to Florida. I wish
you know, I didn't make it to Tampa, but I've got to make it to Tampa, so we'll make sure I see you, Steve, and I got a couple other guys I need to see as well.
Sounds great. Thank you again.
Gotcha. Other questions? Other questions? Very well. We'll say go
Fred,
on.
Hey, Bob Robbins here.
Bob, how are you?
Yeah, good. Since we do have a little bit of a opportunity to add to things here, our perspective, I thought our observations on the home builders earlier was rather stunning. I hadn't realized that they had just been entering and making a huge downtrend. And then I noticed Bob Pisani on CNBC categorized the whole stock market situation as late cycle, which means defensive stocks are doing very well. And that would, of course, include the utilities, and you could see it in the XLU, I believe. XLU is the S&P utility.
Yeah.
You see it's outperforming, powering higher. I hadn't realized it was quite that strong. And commodities up, cyclicals down. So this is going to impress a lot of people with the, you know, the idea that we've got a bear market going on here. It certainly, I think, is consistent with your negative view into, I think you said June. So I just thought I'd add that. I have also noticed that we are still getting decent performance out of some of the defensive growth stocks, I would call them, or the low PE growth stocks, to wit, my favorite today is Hewlett-Packard, HPQ, where Warren Buffett announced that he's bought 4% of the stock.
Company. He's not a good value investor, though, Bob.
He's doing well. His Berkshire is doing well now. But any thoughts you want to add to that?
No, Bob. I think you're right, Bob. I think that a lot of people, and Bob, I did this back in 2000 to 2002. I certainly looked at the tech wreck every single day because that was the news, and it was so dramatic. But, you know, I didn't think in terms of, you know, the stocks that were working. And golly, I really thank Jeff Garbaz for mentioning the home builders to me. I had completely forgotten about that group, just completely forgot.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you weren't looking at them either.
No, I wasn't.
But, you know, Bob, in this case, I don't have any of the classic indications I got before, before, say, 2000. And we had them then. You remember we had them. That's right around the time I left Robinson Humphrey. And we had very definite, we're going to get pulverized indications. And we just don't have those same sorts of indications now, but we have them on different sectors. But Bob, to me, it is rare, and you lived through the 70s. I mean, Bob's old. Bob's older than I am. Not many people on the call are, but Bob is old. In the 70s, you really didn't have much that went up, did you?
No.
If you bought any stock at all, you ended up down. It was just a question of how far down you were. And this environment isn't like that at all.
Hey, guys, it's Jeff. I want to jump in for a second because I want to get your perspective on some stats that I've got that I haven't talked with either of you about. So one thing I'm a big fan of doing is first of all, tracking year-to-date statistics. And I'm going to go back to last year. So we peaked last year in February. We had 82% of stocks higher for the year. And by the end of the year, we were down to 55%. And we got a decent sell-off in kind of October. We went from late summer being at 70% down to 61%. And January, we hit a low of 19.76 up for the year of this year. So January was clearly bad. February, we did a little better. We got back to 28.69 up. And then March, we're at 34.19. The question I have for you guys is twofold. It's a comment on the degree of stocks that are down. But then something also I do, I track up more than 50%, up more than 25%, up more than 10%. And what I found interesting about this last month, and I also do the same, by the way, on the downside, down more than 50, down more than 25, down more than 10. So on the positive side, we went from 203 stocks at the end of February up more than 25% to 497 being up more than 25%. And up more than 10, we went from 665 to 1,016. And then on the down more than 25, we went from 998 all the way to 1125 that were down more than 25. And then the down more than 10%, stayed at the same level, basically, 15 to 23.36. So doesn't that kind of show us that, like, to Fred's point, the value, the late cyclical stuff, as you were saying, Bob, can do okay, and that we're really in a stock picker's market on both sides, on the long side and on the short side right now, which to me it can be a very precarious situation. So I'm curious what you guys think about the setup that we're in right now.
Well, Bob, I'll go first because you're going to probably sound more intelligent about it than I am because Bob is a better stock picker than I am.
No, I'd rather just let you handle it.
Okay. Jeff, what that says to me is, and I know I sound like a broken record, but it says to me that there's a real change in the market going on that's going to last for a while, right? You know, Jeff, one other statistic that would be interesting to know that I don't know, you know, we've seen over and over again in market history, one sector becomes the biggest in the S&P, and that's replaced by another sector, right? Well, tech, I think, became the biggest sector in the S&P a year or two ago, and I think it's on the way to being replaced by something else, perhaps energy. Don't know what it's going to be. But the real key here is when that biggest sector starts to work its way into becoming a medium-sized or smallest sector, for a good while, that drags on the market because the biggest sector in the market suddenly isn't doing well, right? And that's what I think we're seeing now, right? This is a good time for us financial advisors because we're going to see something, you know, we're going to be able to beat the S&P a little more easily because we're going to be out of the weak stuff. The other thing that I would mention, if you look at the performance of RSP right now, which is the equally weighted S&P, and compare that to SPY, you're seeing fairly good outperformance of RSP, and the reason for that is simple. It doesn't have the huge overweighting in tech, right? Especially because we just got through the March rebalance on RSP. And again, let's talk for just a minute about equally weighted, because I think there is a misconception, an implied misconception in equally weighted, that I know I had until I talked to Dave Holt at Trade Levels, who ran one of the first unweighted indexes. The S&P, the RSP is really only absolutely equally weighted four times a year when it rebalances. Then it immediately starts getting out of balance again, right? Because you've got sectors that go up and sectors that go down, and it doesn't rebalance daily. Okay, but right now it rebalanced in March, and the S&P, we're starting to see tech weaken again. It could very well be that RSP outperforms for the next 3 months again, and then we see a rebalance in June. So that, I think, is indicative of what you're saying, Jeff, that we're seeing different stocks go up and more then are going to affect the market, and at the same time, market-related stocks that are going down a lot more.
Yeah, so I got to follow on to that one. I was just looking at something. I agree with everything you said about RSP. What's interesting, though, is QQEW, which is equal weight QQQ, looks exactly like QQQ, so there's no differentiation there in the equal weight of the Qs. And so what do you make of that?
That's where all the stock weakness is, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, right. That's what I wanted you to say. But, yeah.
And
so
again, go back for anyone who cares to look at this. And Bob, I'll send you something on this if you want. If you go back and look at the period on NYA and SPY, or the New York Composite Index and the S&P 500. You'll see that on NYA, there was no lost decade. If you bought NYA at the exact peak in 2000 and sold it in 2007, you made 40% on your money. Okay? And if you did that on SPY or the S&P 500, you broke even, right? Now, an obvious question would be, well, golly, the S&P 500 invests in New York Stock Exchange stocks, and certainly the New York Composite invests in New York Stock Exchange stocks. How could one be up 40% and the other one be flat? That's a great question, because they're both cap-weighted indexes. Okay. Well, the answer to that was, what did S&P do in March of 2000? They decided that their index wasn't doing so well, so they added a bunch of NASDAQ stocks to it, things like CMGI that went to zero, things like Cisco, Intel, and Yahoo that went down 80%, right? And they didn't take them out. The New York Composite Index, by definition, wasn't allowed to add any NASDAQ stocks, right? So you have to look at how the weightings of these things affect the actual index and pick an index where you're not going to get screwed by weighting, right? That's why I like the unweighted right now S&P 500 the most, because it does have some of the really good, you know, first-tier tech stocks like Microsoft and Apple in it, but it doesn't have, you know, 40% of the value of the index in five stocks. And this is the time when you don't want to have that. Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, there's sometimes when you want that. RSP on an ultra-long-term basis has outperformed the S&P 500 by about 1.5%. But that doesn't mean it does 1.5% every year. Right? Where it seems to work the best is if you buy RSP at the bottom in a recession. But you got to watch the weighting thing. But yeah, Jeff, I think that's absolutely right. I think that, again, everything that I look at points to rotation and not doom.
Good. In that regard, Fred, let me just point out that I think we in the last few days, we've entered a riskier phase here in the stock market, because you've got a couple of your Fed governors talking about raising rates a half point hike twice in a row. And that is, that's got sent a shiver down the spine of a lot of investors. And I'd add to that that whenever the bank stocks start doing terribly, it's a bad sign. It's a bad indicator. It's a bear market indicator. So I'm just pointing out that it would not surprise me if this market broke hard now.
Yeah. You know, Bob, one of my old coworkers at Merrill Lynch, Cheryl Rowan, that ran the portfolio strategy department there, the research portfolios, for many, many years, she said exactly the same thing. She said that when the financials start to act badly, you're in real trouble. And if Cheryl's on the call, and sometimes she is on this call, but she never says anything, she's welcome to chime in. But, yeah, I think that that connotes extreme risk. And, Bob, you know, I can't believe that there are not some Russian-based derivatives out there. There's derivatives on everything else, right? And, you know, Warren Buffett called those, you know, financial weapons of mass destruction. I just can't believe that they never created any fancy derivatives around Russia. That would be the only thing the only time that they ever never created fancy dividends around anything that had volatility. So we'll see. But if I'm in financials, I'm in the brokerage firms, but I'm really in the regional banks like my Fifth Third. So anyway, other questions?
Hey, Fred.
Hey guys, just a follow-up on Bob's comments on the Fed. I mean, the Fed is using the best tool they have, which is jawboning. And, you know, they kind of had Lael Brainard come out there and say what the FOMC minutes were going to say the day after, and that led to the sell-off the last 2 days. And then at the same time, you had William Dudley, who used to run the New York Fed, do an op-ed in Bloomberg, probably related as well, where he came out and said that the stocks and bonds need to be crushed to bring inflation down, I don't know why the price has to come down to kill inflation. I don't get that relationship, but nonetheless, it's a relationship. And I think that they feel like they can do the job boning, and that will take care of itself. So any thoughts on that?
To me, there's only one big thought, Jeff, and that is that every period of sustained cost push inflation that I've seen, and again, remember, I've always mentioned that I'm a Keynesian economist and I believe in cost push. Every sustained period of cost push inflation has come about because of higher energy prices, mostly higher oil prices. And that's why, to me, the Fed can do all it wants to do in terms of talking, but until they do something to lower energy prices besides releasing energy from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, we're going to have inflation. And I'll also mention, too, Jeff, again, I mentioned this on the call, I believe they desperately want inflation, desperately want it, and I'll tell you why. It's the only way to get rid of all the debt. Is to inflate it away.
Yeah, I buy that. I buy that argument.
And I think Greenspan was worried about that in 2002, and it's been going on for a while. And you know that they've got to do something. You know, I'll mention one thing, and then I'll get to Bill's question, and then I'm going to have to get off. But I bought Amy this wonderful birthday card in Florida about 10 years ago. More like 20 years ago now, I think, God. But it was while I was still at Merrill Lynch. It was called The Good Old Days, and it talked about what everything was like in her birth year, okay, which was in the 60s. And I ended up not giving her the card. I've kept it because it gave price levels in the 60s, and it said things like you could buy a Chevrolet, a brand new Chevrolet for $3,000, right? You could buy a gallon of gas for 29 to 31 cents. You could buy a house for $15,000. And what hit me on that was if you multiplied all of those numbers times 10, you got today's prices, more or less. Where they really won was you could send your kid to Harvard for $1,000 a year, no more. Not $10,000 a year now. They've really won out. But if you look at gas at $2.90 a gallon, a Chevrolet at $30,000 for Chevrolet, you know, a house in the Southeast, you can get some for $150, right? It's not the same. But the point is, the reason for that was inflation and the debt remained constant. And that's what I think they're trying to do. We're not going to live long enough to see it. At least I'm not going to, but our kids will. Remember when a corporate CEO, Jeff? My dad was a corporate CEO in the 60s and 70s, corporate CEO, no less. And he made $150,000 a year when the average family of four made $4,000
a year. Yeah, I hear you. I mean, it's
right.
Like the same thing like
what
Oscar Robertson, one of the greatest basketball players of all time, made versus an average guy in the NBA is making now. And it's not 10 times. It's like 1,000
yeah,
times.
Not everything applies. But when you look at the price level for the average middle-class American, that was a real interesting thing. And, you know, everyone says, golly, man, I wish I lived back in the 60s. Gas was 29 cents a gallon. They weren't saying, you know, you only made $4,000 a year, buddy. Right? They sort of forget that one part of it. But any event, let me get to Bill Rice's question, and then I've got to go lurching off into the sunset.
Hey, Fred. Yeah. Thanks for making a little extra time.
Sure.
I just wanted a quick question. Would you consider raising additional cash from tax-free fixed income in here?
You know, Bill, if you looked at the chart of the monthly on MUB, and boy, does that trading terrible. The short answer is yes. Or,
okay.
Again, if you've got – certainly if you had bond mutual funds – you know, if you had the bonds, you might want to do let them mature and reinvest them at higher rates, unless you need the tax loss. But mutual funds are, I haven't been watching the net asset value on some of these mutual funds and munis and that, but I bet they're not doing so well if MUB is down as much as it is. And that's really cratered. That's just been a tremendous surprise. When I looked at the chart in the monthly, because I don't look at that chart every week, I have to admit that I was very surprised.
Okay. Thank you, Fred.
Sure. Very good. Other questions? Otherwise, we're going to go lurching off into the sunset, but I will be around this weekend. Please send me emails if you have questions. Going once? Going twice? Very well. This will end the Fred Report Technical Market Call for April 7th, 2022. Everybody enjoy a pollen-free weekend.